Welcome to the workshop of Overeaters Anonymous Birthday Weekend. Grow, service is slimming. Let's start with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Each speaker will share their experience, strength, and hope for 12 minutes on how they are of service in their personal lives and their recovery and how being of service keeps them coming back. After the speakers, we'll have a 12 minutes for the writing portion of this workshop, followed with 25 minutes of open sharing at the podium. The timer will be set for 3 minutes, so please wrap up your share when the timer goes off to allow for others to share. This workshop is being recorded. If you would like to share, you must fill out a release form, which will be located right over here to the podium. Our first speaker this morning is Alan Z.
Thank you. Do I stand? Do I sit?
Hi, I'm Alan Z, compulsive overeater. Hi, everyone. Is this okay? Yeah, volume-wise and all of that? All right. Yeah, I'm Alan Z, and I am a compulsive overeater. I think they booked the big room for the sexuality workshop, and we just happen to be in here first. No? I think it's true. Anyway, I'm grateful to be here. I've been in program since 1996. I restarted my abstinence in 2002. I'm not a perfect example of this program. I am a perfect example of keep coming back. But, with those years I have and and my top weight was 360 pounds thereabouts, So I have received amazing gifts from sticking around, doing the work, being of service, all of it imperfectly, With that said, I'm just going to be honest, there's only a few of us here and a recording that will go around the world. But I'm just going to be honest and say that, when I was asked to do service at the service panel, let me put it this way. We have a timer here as well. Thank you. So I wasn't sure I was going to come to the birthday party this weekend. So to be completely honest with you, and I live here, so I don't have a great excuse. To be completely honest with you, when I was asked to be of service here, I was really grateful initially because I thought that will get me to the birthday party. I'll have a role to play. I'll be able to be of service there, and I'll show up. So, at its basic level, service is working for me. It was of service to be asked, and I'm grateful to be here. However, my other reaction was, oh, what a boring panel. This is going to be terrible. I don't want to speak on the service panel. That's going to be awful. Who's going to come to that? They're only the really hardcore people are going to be here. So if you're here, thank you. But that's just to give you honestly a little of the prejudice that the word service still on some level brings up. It sounds like work. It sounds like something I might not want to do. It sounds like something that this, self-involved, self-centered addict doesn't want to have to do because it's not about me, right? And my addiction is about me, thinking about me, worrying about me, taking care of me, me being comfortable, me getting enough food so I don't have a feeling, right? So anything that is going to interfere with the feedback loop of me, me, me is a little distasteful to my disease, to my recovery. It's the sunlight of the spirit. And that really is my experience of service, that at its most basic level, it gets me out of me. It stops the terrible self-absorption that is part and parcel for me of being a compulsive overeater, and I think for many of us, and is a really great blessing. But I have to do stuff that I don't want to do. And that, too, is great, I was told when I started program that there was a very basic form of service that we could all take part in immediately. And I want to share it because it was actually quite helpful when I was new, and it's even helpful now. And someone said to me, the most basic service is you go to a meeting and you sit in a chair so there can be a meeting that day, because maybe somebody needs a meeting, even if you don't, right? So that fundamental service of, like, I show up so the program continues, so the newcomer has a place to come. And, you know, if you've been around program any number of years, I'm sure you've had this experience at some time, going to a new meeting, going to a strange meeting, going to a meeting on a holiday, and there's two people there, or there's three people there. You know, one of my greatest meetings that I showed up for several years back, like maybe 8 or 9 years back, I went to a meeting like it was either Christmas or it was like right around Christmas. And there was a noon meeting. I just felt like I really needed to be at a meeting. And there was a noon meeting somewhere. And I went to it. And there were four people. And one of them was a newcomer, a woman who I'd never met and whose name I won't use here. And my inward thought, if I'm going to be honest with you, my inward thought walking into a meeting where, you know, for the first 20 minutes, you know, prior to the meeting, I was the only one there, and then there were a couple of stragglers. My first thought was, you know, groan, this is going to suck. This is going to be a terrible meeting. Why did I come? I should have stayed home and, you know, read the big book or listened to a podcast. So I showed up, but I did show up for this meeting, and there was someone new, you know, and I had an opportunity to be of service to a newcomer, and you'll hear in a moment why I'm remembering one particular meeting about 8 years ago. So there was this newcomer there, and I chatted with her for a while afterwards. It was the holiday. She was really struggling. You know, I said a few things. I can't remember what it was. I think I got picked to share at that meeting because I might have been the only one who was abstinent at that very small meeting. Well, wouldn't you know, this happened to be one of those newcomers who kept coming back and who came alive and who got the program. And we never know, you know, when we talk to a new person, is this someone who's going to be here? Is this someone who's going to be here for a meeting and then disappear for 5 years and then come back and tell the story of, you know. But this was someone at that meeting. This woman was someone who kept coming back and got abstinent. And you know what? I still see her, you know. And every time we see each other, she says, you know, we remember that meeting together. And she has become a real light of the program in the ensuing years. And I have, I would be lying if I didn't tell you that there have been times that I have been struggling over the years where I went to a meeting, at least a few times, and she spoke, and I got the message from her, you know. And it reminded me, this isn't a 12-step, you know, necessarily workshop, it's a service workshop, but that has been a really important reminder of why I work with others, why I'm of service to others. Like, I am, on a selfish level, I'm ensuring my future recovery. Because I have helped another member of Overeaters Anonymous to be here and give back to me and to others. And so I've gotten so much from her over the years and from that one little story of service. So yeah, the basic idea that I just show up at a meeting and I fill a chair is a great starting point for me, especially if I'm new. And over the years, you know, I've done service on a number of different levels. My first year in program, I was in New York. There's a 100-pounder meeting. It used to be on Wednesday nights in New York. I got into the program in Manhattan. And you had to have a year of abstinence in order to be a secretary of that meeting. So this is how arrogant I was as a newcomer. You know, I wanted to be king of OA, you know. Like, I got here and I thought, well, no other group will have me, you know. These people seem to like me. I want to be king of OA. So you needed to have a year in order to do service at that level at that meeting. And my first year in program was very focused on, I am going to get a year so I can sit in the front of the room at the 100-pounders meeting, and everyone will look at me and listen to me. And you know, like many addicts, I wanted to be invisible and the president at the same time, you know. But really that first year, what kept me coming back was, a lot of what kept me coming back was this idea that I want to get a year abstinent so I can be secretary and do service at this meeting. And it was really helpful, you know. So today, I think that, how much time do I have? 2 minutes. So I was driving here today, and I have to admit I was talking to a fellow, and I was complaining a little bit about this, you know, speaking at this workshop and not knowing what to say. And he said to me, why don't you tell them what you've been doing for me for the last few days? Well, what have I been doing for you? Well, I'm sick, and you keep calling me to check in. I said, oh, yeah, I have been doing that. And he said, why don't you tell them about how you came and helped me with some stuff the other day? Whatever. Oh, yeah, I am doing that. Why don't you tell them about my sponsor's out of town, and so I'm emailing my food to you, and you said that that would be fine. Oh, yeah, I am doing that, you know. So he was reminding me of all the simple and really beautiful ways I've been of service to him just recently. And, you know, it's not because I'm a saint. It's not because I'm, you know, trying to be good. Service for me is not about that. I think I'll just close with this. You know, when Bill talked about service, you know, this, you may have heard this expression, love and service keep us dry, you know. And of all the things we do in program, you know, it helps me. What I was taught was that fundamentally at the very beginning, you know, it was one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic that kept them sober. You know, a higher power's intervention and then service. Because Bill was ready to drink again. There have been times in my program when I'm ready to eat again. Times. At least where I've entertained. And I was taught that the way to really stay sober long term is to get into service. When I'm giving away the program, I am working on my abstinence. I'm not wrestling the food. I'm not alone trying to figure it out. You know, I'm giving it away. It was given to me freely. I give it freely. That's what I've been taught is my responsibility. And with all of my, you know, ups and downs and funny stories about not wanting to be here today, I really am grateful that people have been of service to have this birthday party. I'm grateful, Laura, to be of service and invite me here. And I'm grateful that I showed up and was able to be here with you, and thank all of you. Okay.
This is bothering. Sorry. Do you mind if I...
Not at all.
No, I really like sitting like that. But I like the microphone. This is enough to cover me. I'm Lena, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
Quick background. I first came to the program in 1981 at 16 years old. I knew I was home, but I did leave. I was in for a couple of months at that time. I came back in 84, and I haven't left since. I'm maintaining about a 65-pound weight loss. And that's really not ever been important to me. To me, I know I got the first step the minute I walked in. I knew I was powerless. I knew I was going to die of this disease. I wanted to die of this disease. And I have a story of relapse. I was thinking, because I was just asked this morning to speak, and when I saw the panel, I thought, well, because everything is service, but I first thought, I'm a relapse speaker, because I was 4.5 years doing service, working really, really hard. It took me a lot of work to get my abstinence, and now I'll have 24 years at the end of the month. So it just goes so quickly. But I know, I knew I got here, and I knew I was dying, and I felt the first meeting I went to was a small meeting in Santa Monica when I came back. I mean, when I was 18, and I was so. This disease had suffocated the light out of me. All I wanted to do was die, and I walked in and eat and eat and die and hide and die. And I walked into this meeting, and I felt like a flicker of light or of life, and that was the first bit of hope. And like I said, it took me a long time and a lot of work, but I think about service, and for me, service is very unnatural because I'm afraid of people. I don't want to answer the phone. I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to interact with people. And but I do it anyway because my prayer every morning, every hour is, how can I be of service? That's the basic thing. That's the basic. That's why I'm alive. And I went through a terrible trauma. I'm also in I was reading again in the big book how and Bill says many of us do find religious affiliations, and I don't have a religious affiliation, but I have a spiritual course that I study that I've studied 28 years. And I'm in ministerial training for that. So, and that's always being of service in all of my affairs. I have 3 children. I homeschool them. 2 of them are special needs. Service. I'm married to, it's being recorded. I'm married to a difficult man. And I know when I come from service, not focusing on what he's not doing right. What can I get something for you? Not when was the last time someone made me a fucking cup of coffee in this house? No, he doesn't know how to make coffee, and that's just symbolic. Wake up every day. Can I get you a cup of coffee? It's just, that is the miracle for me. Because I do believe that's what God wants for me and for all of us, is to practice the principles of love, generosity, courtesy, and service. I'm so glad Carol's here. I keep looking at it. First I said, no, don't come. But it is Carol that was the channel, the primary channel that gave me my abstinence. And I remember we had dinner the night before my wedding, and I said to you, I wanted him to walk me down the aisle instead of my dad, because I love my dad, but this is where I grew up. This is where I learned the skills to be a functioning person. And also, I think, because when I first asked you to sponsor me, we were just saying you were speaking at you were at a birthday party when you were 7 years abstinent, and I thought, and I had a couple years at the time, but not continuously abstinent, and I thought you were such an old timer, like not old, but like that was so long and such a miracle, and I wanted what you had. And he was the first person. There were lots of people I wanted what they had, but they made suggestions, and I still, no. But I did what he said. I was eating popcorn. Remember, I was, I would, no flour, no sugar, but I was popping, like, I don't even remember the quantities, but bowls and bowls of popcorn. I ripped open my teeth, and I was pouring them. I don't even know if I was doing butter, but saccharin and cinnamon, and then it was cheese, and I ripped open my teeth, and he said, can you do no corn for a week? Scariest thing I've ever been asked, and he said, and call me in a week. When you've done no corn, and that's how it started, and I was willing to because you had what I want, and I believed in you, and I think that is the miracle of this program, is we hold each other up. We're there, and I still have, my life is so not perfect, and I was saying I had a medical situation 5 years ago where I was told I was having mini strokes, and I was told you have to have this brain surgery now, like within a couple of days, or you will die. Didn't scare me, because I don't care. Because I always thought, I'm not afraid of death. That didn't scare me. Or being in a nursing home for the rest of your life. That scared me. But still, I didn't want to have the surgery. I wouldn't agree to it, except that my youngest daughter was 3 at the time. And it was, I had to say to God, I was sure I was going to die on the table, sure of it. I always thought, I remember my 21st birthday in this program. I was in young people's groups ever, and now I'm old. But I remember when I turned 21, I cried for a week. I was at meetings, you know, those days, and I cried for a week. And because I was a suicidal teenager, I wasn't supposed to be 21, and what would I do now? And so I always knew I was going to die young, and I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to die now. And I don't want to have, I'm not going to have the surgery, is my first instinct. And when I prayed and meditated, what do you want me to do? I needed to have surgery. Out of service to my children, because it wouldn't, I just, and that's how God's given me the courage to do the things, to change the things I can. And all I could do, when I had it, I wrote a thing, and I put it in my God box, and I looked at it this morning. It's still on my nightstand, my little God box from then. I don't use it much. I haven't used it lately. And just my surgery, the results are in your hands. I just have to show up. And it was, there were complications. It was supposed to be a 6 to 8 hour surgery, which sounded bad enough to me, but I hemorrhaged, and it was an 18 hour surgery. They thought they lost me. It went on to 7 in the morning. It had started in the afternoon. And then I woke up with terrible complications. I was in bed for months. And then they said, well, you have to do it again on the other side of your brain. And I don't know why I'm talking at this. It's service. I'm sorry, but I think it's because you're here. I'm talking, but... but I was so afraid. I prayed, and I kept saying to my husband, let's just not do it. Let's just not. And I was, but when I came back to the steps, what do? I show up, I do God's will for me. I don't want to abstain. Most days I don't want to abstain. What do? I get up, I abstain. To the best of my ability, and it's been enough time. It's been time now. I didn't want to have a birthday right after the birthday party, so I thought that's typical. Because for the first few years, I would come and I would think, oh, get abstinent. I want it like that. Oh, a birthday party. And then I thought, anyone can do that right after the birthday party. I don't know where my ego. And I have a January 28th birthday, and it's perfect, you know. And it is because of service. It is because of answering the phone. It is making that call. And it's so ingrained in my life. I'm in a, like I said, I homeschool, and we have a co-op sort of thing. And I'm always there early, putting out chairs and putting them away. It's second nature to me. I don't understand not. I have a 15-year-old daughter that I'll bring early. She doesn't want to set up chairs. She wants to sit on her iPod. I can explain to her the value of service, how important it is to feel part of the group and to give back. And we always get, when we give, we get. She doesn't get it at all. She's 15 and she just, you know, wants to be given to. And I feel I'm so lucky to have that ingrained because that's how I have the energy to wake up. There's a reason for me to wake up. And I think that with the being bedridden and all the things that I went through and the kids, I don't have as much opportunity to be at meetings. I listen to podcasts. I make phone calls. I do go to some meetings, but my recovery at this phase of my life is different. It's non-traditional. It's not what I thought it would be, but is that... Oh, my God, I still have 2 minutes. It's like I've been talking forever. No, I'm sorry. I'm like, am I boring you yet? And I forgot what I was saying, but... Oh, I have a non-traditional recovery. But I don't know. You know, we all have our own recovery, and we all have, we all do the best we can. And I love my recovery. I am so blessed. And I said I know that I owe my very life to this program. 1 and 2, I got right away. It was 3. And it was Carol also that helped redefine the third step in my mind. It is an action step. It is turning my will and my life over to the care of God. But it's not just, I've turned my will and my life over to your care, thy will be done, and I'm going to stay in bed today. Or, you know, it is the action step. Do I believe God wants me abstinent? Yeah, because if I'm not abstinent, my disease, it's so dark, and that's very clear. And am I willing to go to any lengths to abstain and to follow that abstinence? And sometimes it's hard. My 15-year-old has been sick this week, and she missed dinner, and she wanted me to make her food, like, at 10 o'clock at night. I want to have a temper tantrum. Don't you know who I am? I can't go into the kitchen now and start. And I was hungry. I mean, I'm always hungry. But, you know, there's food there. I was hungry. But I somehow, what do you want me to do? Do I want to tell her to go make her own food? Because that's what I want to do. Make your own. Do I want to, you know, I believe, God, you can get me through the next hour abstinently. I can be of service, make her this food, and, good, now so that 2 minutes went like that, and be of service. And that's how I have my life today, and I'm grateful to be here, and thank you for asking me to share. Did you want to stand? Did he use the other microphone?
All right, my name's Matt. I'm a compulsive overeater. To qualify, I have 6 years of abstinence. I'm down 160 pounds from my top weight. And just to show you how self-centered I was, I thought Tara was in here to hear me talk, but most likely he was here to hear you. Right here to hear you. It is kind of disappointing, I think, when you don't see a workshop that's filled up, especially one that's about service, because I think this whole program, I'm here because someone else is willing to be of service. And I think that for me is what the whole program is about. And, you know, for me, it's like I have 6 years and I'm so new. I came in at 22 and I don't know how to do life and I still don't know how to do life. And more importantly, what I'm learning now is that I don't even know how to have experience. Like, even just having new experiences is difficult for me to have. It brings up a reaction that makes me want to run, or it makes me want to be self-destructive, or, you know what, I'm a compulsive overeater, so it makes me want to eat. And, you know, Carol got me on the intergroup board at 1 year of abstinence at 22 years old, and I learned so much. I learned how to hold my own ground as a 22-year-old sitting on a board with 40 and 50-year-olds, and also how to yield and how to understand the principles of the program and the traditions. And I mean, but that's neither here, you know. It's like, the thing is, like, you look at the events that we're having here, like, embrace body and sexuality, and then a panel that works. It really does. Finding the courage to trust, and then a marathon meeting on compassion, and then promises of recovery, and then dusting off the cobwebs, keeping it simple, keeping it fresh is the long timers panel. And the whole thing for me, it's like what service does for me is service is like my mat back, like whenever my life gets funky, you know. I mean, I've been joking before the meeting, but I just like all I want to get up here and say is duh. Like, duh. Like, that's really what this is all about. And you know what? It's like it's experiential. And I'll tell you what, I got married and I'm going through a divorce now. And I was with her for over 7 years. And a big part of it was that when I lost 100 pounds, I was like, thank God I don't have to experience certain things in my life because I'm married. I have somebody. It's okay. I'll be okay. I don't have to deal with certain things. And, you know, what's happening to me now is with going through the divorce, you know, for the first time as a 100-pounder, I'm experiencing things in my life that are really new and really different and really scary that otherwise I wouldn't have been experiencing. And it's just scary, you know. And these are the types of things you'd want to act out over, you'd want to eat over, all sorts of things like that. And here's the thing, it's like in the middle of going through the moving out, I still have to go to that meeting that I'm the timer for. In the middle of crying and being so depressed, I still have to take a sponsee's phone call. God honest truth, I got myself involved with a person this past week, and I totally lost myself in it. Totally lost myself in it. And it was great, and it was exciting, and it was entirely scary, and it was something that I don't think I could have stopped it if I tried. And I continually kept my sponsors in the loop about what was going on with me. And I was scared and everything. And but the thing is, like, I had to go to the Wednesday night 100-pounders meeting because I was a secretary. My head wasn't there, but my body was. I had to go to a Sunday night meeting that I was a timer for. My head wasn't there, but my body was. You know, my sponsees were calling me and complaining about their problems, and I listened to it and shared my experience about it, and for a couple seconds I was there, you know. But it kept me there just enough, so that I'm still here, if that makes sense. Service allows me to feel good about myself even when I don't feel like I do the right thing. Service allows me to remember that I am always a part of the world, you know. It allows me to be here and allows me to be with you people, you know. Just by walking in here, I already got to talk to 3 or 4 people about what happened this past week because I needed to talk about it, but I wouldn't have talked about it if I didn't come here to talk about service, you know. They say if you want to have self-esteem, do esteemable acts. That's what my first sponsor taught me. That's all my sponsors taught me. That's all you guys teach me. I found like this part in the big book that in Dr. Bob's Nightmare, and I feel like he actually, to me, it lays out what I didn't have to ask anyone, Jackie. I found it myself. It's on page 181. He says, I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learn to others who want and need it badly. I do it for 4 reasons. 1, sense of duty. 2, it's a pleasure. 3, because in so doing, I am paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And 4, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Unlike most of our crowd, I did not get over a craving for liquor much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. He uses the word abstinence. I think that's funny. It was almost always with me, but at no time have I been anywhere near yielding. I used to get terribly upset. And he goes on to continually talk about just, you know, how scared he was all the time. And, you know, what service does is it allows me to feel grounded, and more importantly, it allows me to find and utilize the experiences I have. You know, I mean, the whole thing is like, we come here to get abstinent. I mean, let's be serious. Like, the thing is, the only way we can really be of service is when we work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Until we work the 12 steps, I can sit there and I can be the timer of meeting because does that require 30 days of abstinence? Does this require? But the whole point is like, the real gift is when we get in there and we're carrying the message to another compulsive overeater. You know, when I came in pretty young, and there was no one with my experience. And I had to find it. I had to find the people who had long-term absence who came in young. And I asked them what they were doing. I had to find them. I had to find them. And then the thing is like the past 5 years, I've just been doing my thing, and I'm sponsoring guys who are 50 or 60 years old who have recovery in AA, and they think they know it all, and then they don't want to listen to me. They don't want to do any, you know. And then here's the thing. It's like just in the past couple months, I now am sponsoring two young men who are 25 and 28 years old who really, really want recovery. Who really want recovery. And in the story, he sold himself short. It says, when you are right and time is right, providence will provide. And that whole story is about this man who had just gotten sober, and he's trying to find a way to like be of service. He's like, I know I have to be of service. And he goes to Chicago, and he's going to start a group. He's going to start a group, and no one's showing up. Like, no one's doing it. And his sponsor said, when you are right and time is right, providence will provide. You know? It's like, this is where the miracles happen. It's not, it's even in like, you know, people do 30s, 60s, and 90s, and they sit in meetings, and then they still bitch and complain about their lives. But it's like the whole point is to go to a meeting, to sit there, and to share the experience of the program and how it is making your life better. And it's not about doing it right. I am screwing up so much in my life right now. And you know what? For the first time, I'm learning to be okay with it because I'm showing up, and I'm being of service, and I'm staying abstinent, and more than anything, I'm letting you guys know I'm screwing up so that the next person that comes in that feels that they can't screw up, at least maybe now they know that they can, and they can stay abstinent through it. You know, like for me, like life is just so much about having experiences, and it's taken me 6 years to get to a point where I'm finally willing to just say, like, I just want to have life experiences, and I want to stay abstinent through it. And it's so stupid sitting on a service panel. I'm sitting there realizing, like, you know what it was? It was going to that stupid meeting and timing for people. And I kept screwing up the timer. I was like, I didn't time 5 or 6 people. but I was there. Like, I was there, and I was abstinent. You know? And I was like, God, I'm so grateful for the people. Like, my sponsor, the first thing he did was he took me to a meeting, to an AA meeting, and afterwards they were going to answer all my questions. And I share this all the time because to me it's so profound. And they said, we're willing to give you the one thing we can't ever get back. And they said, and I said, well, what's that? We're willing to give you our time. And that told me people are willing to give me something that is so special that they can't ever get back. Then there is something special in these rooms. There's something so dynamic and so different that you can find anywhere else. And like, God, I just wish people would embrace OA more. Like, I wish people would embrace the 12 steps and embrace the traditions and embrace letting this fellowship embrace you and take you over and let it be your life. Because, like, I can be scared to death, and for the first time, I'm living. And it's because I'm just here. I'm here, and I'm here, and I'm here. And I've been mean to my sponsees. I had one sponsee call up. He goes, Matt, I'm thinking. I'm like, stop thinking. Call me back later. You know, like, I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And I called my sponsors, like, I told him to stop thinking because he probably gave him the right suggestion. You know, like, that's... And, like, to hear the stories of people in recovery and, like, what they go through. To sit in a meeting and to be willing just to be open to what people are sharing. This is a long 12 minutes.
We'll
go fast. Okay. Wow. Like, embracing body and sexuality, like, I need to make sure I'm doing serious service if I'm going to start trying to embrace my body and sexuality. Like, I need to be a timer at a couple meetings if I'm going to do that. Or, like, when I go out of town and, you know, I'm traveling somewhere and I go to a meeting. You know, I went to one, I mean, I'm from Virginia. I went to a meeting in Virginia, and How is a really strong program there, and I'm not in How, but I'm a 100-pounder, and the woman was asking about what I eat and how I eat, and she goes, you mean you're a 100-pounder and you don't weigh and measure everything? And I said, no, I don't, and I'm still abstinent. And you know what? I didn't teach her anything. I wasn't trying to carry anything to her. I was just sharing my experience, you know? And it doesn't matter what I do or what she does or whatever, but it's the principle of, like, you find what works for you. And, like, that's, we're experiencing each other here. You know, we're experiencing each other. And to sit in a room and to see people recover and then see people be of service, you know, Or did I step down from the LA Intergroup? I was on the LA Intergroup board, and I thought that, you know, I moved to the Valley, and I couldn't make any of the meetings anymore. And I thought I was not putting OA first, because you have to make at least one intergroup meeting, one of the meetings in that intergroup, and I couldn't anymore. And I felt like if I stepped down, that meant I wasn't being of service to the intergroup, or I wasn't being of service in OA. But the thing is like the bylaws say you had to attend one LA intergroup meeting. I was not being able to be of service to the intergroup the way I needed to be. So I was scared, but I had to step down from my position. And you know what? Now I'm doing a lot of other stuff, you know, and to go to world service and to see people from all over the world speaking all these different languages and to hear a woman in a meeting crying because she's trying to speak English and just share her 3 minutes, it's beautiful, you know. Thank you so much for keeping me absent. I'm done.
Let's thank Matt, Lena, and Alan D. So now we have 12 minutes for the writing portion, and I'm going to read what our assignment is because people are going to listen to this. The handout says, grow, service is slimming. Service never hurt anyone. One, how have you used being of service to help your OA program and your life as a whole? Two, make a list of all the ways you can be of service in and out of the room. For example, taking out the trash at home, picking up your friend's kids from soccer practice, cleaning the bathrooms at meetings. Think outside the box. The sky is the limit to your recovery. Remember, when we are of service, we are not feeding our disease, literally and figuratively. So we're open for 3 minute shares. If you'll just make a line over here, you can sign the release waiver for your voice to be recorded and just go from there, and Perry's the timer.
Oh, okay, I'll sign it afterwards. Terrell, compulsive reader. Yeah, it is kind of disconcerting when you walk into a room full of service and it's empty, or not empty, but, you know, it's when I was told that this is what we do. It's not a question of whether you want to, whether you like it. It's what you do. The option is death. It's either service or death. I don't see anywhere where in our literature it talks about it's about the me generation or it's me and what about me and my needs. It's about service. You know, I read that little thing about what do you do, service, and how do you incorporate in your life and what has it done for you. It's like, hello? Like, duh? I mean, it's like... You know, I admit I don't like to do service. Sometimes I go like, really, I don't want to go to this meeting. I don't want to drive all the way down to Downey on a Monday night. I don't want to do, you know, really, I don't want to take this phone call at 6 o'clock in the morning and listen to my sponsor talk about the same thing again. You know, and like going like, just get a life, you know. But it's like, you do. You just do it. And I should probably pitch about this because I have my ex-sponsor is in a nursing home and she's not doing well. And she's getting more feeble. And I'm her primary caregiver. And the assisted living facility called me yesterday and said she's disoriented and she's lethargic. So they did a urine sample. And now I've got to take her urine sample to Kaiser to have it tested. And the last thing I want to do is do that. Trust me. The last thing. You know, pick up this woman's urine and deliver it. But as much as I balk about it, I know I will do it. As much as I scream and yell and rant and rave about it's not fair and why did, you know, blah, 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 and why don't some of their other ex-sponsees do it? I know that the answer is if I don't do it, there's a price to pay on my soul. And when service is shown to me as there's an opportunity for service, and if I don't answer that call to service, there's a price on my soul. And the reason why I stayed abstinent so long, I believe, one of the reasons, is because I worked a 12-step program that enabled me to be comfortable in my own skin. And if I'm comfortable in my own skin, I don't need the desire to kill myself with food one more time. And how do I get uncomfortable in my own skin? By not answering the call of service. You know, I hear around these halls this year about the birthday party and how it's not like what it was in past, and this birthday party is different, it doesn't have the same. And my response is, what did you do for this birthday party? What did you do? If you didn't do anything for this birthday party, then you can be quiet. Because those of us who do something for these birthday parties, we get to share about what's going on with this birthday party. So if you got a problem with this one, work on the committee next year.
Hi, I'm Jill, compulsive overeater, 100-pounder. Hi, thank you so much, all of you. Got so much from it. And, when it was asked for three-minute pitches and there were crickets in the room, I'm like, okay. So my responsibility is to raise my hand and get up and share, because this is the last place I want to be up here as a 100-pounder. You know, my disease wants to keep me invisible. So a contrary action would be to raise my hand and share and stand in front of a microphone and a podium. So I treat my abstinence, my abstinence is everything to me, and I treat it like the precious gift that I've been given. And that being said, I go to any lengths to be of service and any lengths to protect and nurture my abstinence. So what service means to me is, you know, I get up early at 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to do that. And do my reading and my writing for my sponsor, give her my food, and take a number of sponsees calls right after that. I don't want to do that, but it keeps me abstinent. I walk to meetings in the morning, early in the morning. I don't want to do that either, but it keeps me abstinent. And I show up, and I sit in the front row, and I raise my hand, and that all keeps me abstinent. I want to talk a little bit about my grandmother passing some years ago, and because I'm self-centered and selfish, when she was dying, I was too busy to be a part of her life. And so part of my amends for her, and I owed her some money as well that I never paid back because I'm selfish and self-centered. So part of my amends to her was to show up at a senior center. My dream is to be a floral designer. So went out, went down the Flower Mart on my own, with my own monies, of course, and showed up the senior center and showed the old-timers there how to make little flower arrangements. You know, and I don't want to do that. I'm selfish and self-centered. That's the last thing I want to do on a Saturday afternoon. You know, my ass would have me in front of the TV eating. But those are the things that keep me absent. I can tell you that after that experience, I was filled with so much love and gratitude. And that's what service is to me. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lisa, and I'm a compulsive overeater and bulimic.
Hello.
You know, I know I'm on the beam when I'm willing to do the things I don't want to do. It's always a good sign. So I was struck, as, you know, one of the things I love about recovery is that we all have a unique experience to share with others and how those specific people are drawn to us, to our specific experience. Even though we don't know it, there's like a connection. And, you know, one of the great things, you know, I'm in a couple of different 12-step programs, and in this particular program, I've been called to service as a sponsor quite a bit, and it's been a gift. And it always amazes me that, you know, within that practice of being a sponsor, you find out as you talk to these people, like, what that specific draw is that you didn't know. You know, you find yourself talking to somebody and then them sharing what's going on and you being, I know why we were brought together, because I have that. And I have experience, and I've had experience in recovery with that specific thing. And what a gift that is, you know. And for me, you know, that kind of service in this program, what it's done for me, and it's so interesting, The thing, you know, like my dark past is my greatest asset because with it I avert misery and death for others. My past was dark, and in that darkness, I never in a million years would have thought that I would laugh about it, that it would be funny, that it would benefit anybody, that it would be of any use. It was just painful and dark. And what I've learned in this program by sharing with other people, and one of my favorite things is laughing about it, like finding somebody who's in pain and then me sharing a similar experience to them and then hearing them laugh, which then makes me laugh, that is such a gift that we can laugh about those dark places in our lives. And what I've realized that that is for me is that, you know, working with other people and sharing my experience, strength, and hope has changed my perception of my past. It changed it from being dark and dirty and ugly to something that's funny. And that is a freaking miracle. I would never have thought that. You know, I've had experiences that, you know, are humiliating, that are, you know, that were painful, that hurt, that where others were hurt. And today, you know, when I can be light about those things, it's a gift. You know, and also, you know, and I'll end with this, just that how that darkness connects us together and brings us together. It's a gift. It is such a gift. And, you know, for me, that's the thing I'm most grateful about in this program. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Erin, a compulsive overeater. And probably this is the first time I've been at the birthday party in more than a decade, because one of my major life goals and things I wanted more than anything, even though I already had three very healthy, wonderful kids, sons, I wanted a girl so bad. So now I have an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old, and so they have totally taken over my life. Now, I come from very, very, very young. I was already a compulsive overeater. I'm a very low-bottom compulsive overeater, 100 pounds overweight before I was 25 years old. And I've been coming to these rooms since 1986 when my first son was about 6 months old. And just this week I celebrated 16 years of abstinence, which is a miracle. And so really, the idea of service, I love service. And it's so much a part of my life because one of the things I learned here is to get into action. And if I don't know what to do, I do 100 things. I'm probably to the word. This might even be to the point where I do too much. I'm learning about that issue in another meeting, another room. But the truth is, I can tell you right now, I'm a full-time employee, and I have 5 kids. I'm a Girl Scout leader, and I never was a Girl Scout. That's really either very arrogant or courageous. I don't know. 20 little girls between daisies and brownies. I had them. I didn't have my co-leader with me this week, so, I mean, that was a miracle. And somehow we did an election about what we're going to do for the rest of this year, and I let these, you know, second grade to kindergartners make decisions and guided them a bit. But that's the things I learned here. And I learned a lot of the skills of dealing with others in these rooms. And I, like Matt, early on was in, and twice, I did 2 tours of duty on intergroup boards. You learn a lot or you leave. I was president twice in San Fernando Valley. And I was today, I made my husband get up in the attic and get my box of all my vintage OA stuff down. Since I don't wear these things except for like places like here. And this is from one of the Unity days in the Valley I don't even know how many years ago, but a lot of years ago. I love putting on events. I learned that in OA. I love putting stuff together, like lining up speaker. Oh, that was one of the best things. Service, get a job as a speaker getter because that makes you make phone calls. And I had to hit 2 phone calls a day because my sponsor said 2 calls a day, connect. If it's a message, it doesn't count unless they call you back in that same 24 hours. So that was easy. Take that job. Boom. It doesn't matter why you do it. It doesn't matter what I thought. I just took the action, and guess what? The miracle happened. I lost less, more than 100 pounds in my first year of abstinence, and these pants are older than my daughter's. Easy. That's like a miracle. I, by all rights, should be size 26 plus, which is where I come from before I was 25. So I'm the worst type of compulsive overeater you can have, and I love service. I mean, tell you, there's nothing more I can I cannot tell you how great it is. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bob. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a little disappointed, too, that the room's so small. One of the things that my first sponsor used to say to me is always ask yourself before you take an action, what's the most loving thing I can do? And the most loving thing I can do, I found a lot of times, is just being an active listener, you know? Just the act of listening, just hearing somebody, hearing what they have to say, letting them express who they are. Another thing is, there's kind of this spiritual axiom, you know, that you get what you give. Like there's like a spiritual law of reciprocity. And I can't tell you the number of times in 20-some years of being in OA that I've spoken and felt like I did a really terrible job, you know, and had people come up to me afterwards and tell me how wonderful I was, and I felt like a total dunce, you know. And the thing is that it was my willingness to do the service, even though I may not have felt adequate to do the service or good enough to do the service, because my disease tells me I'm not good enough. So a lot of service is doing things that I might not necessarily be willing to do, but do anyway, you know. And that was something else my sponsor said, that if you don't think that you should go to a meeting, if you can find a reason not to go to a meeting, then you probably should go. If I can find a reason not to speak, then I probably should go speak, you know. If I can find a reason not to take a sponsory on, then I really need to take that sponsory on, you know. And he was a good guy. He's a good guy, my sponsor is. And the sponsors that I have, I'm really grateful for the program. But I have learned also, the last thing is, the one thing about keeping your program fresh is service. Like one of the things that I like to do in our intergroup, I'm from Inland Empire Intergroup, and one of the things that we like to do, one of the committees we have is called the Ways and Means Committee, and it's basically the program chair. And I've done that service. I did that service for several years. And the best part about it, thanks. The best part about it is when I get speakers, I always have a wonderful marathon because I know who's speaking. Okay? And you know what? It always seems to work out. So God works in.
Hi, I'm Lori, compulsive overeater. I was sitting in my chair and I just kept feeling this nudge from behind me, telling me to get up. And, you know, I've been back in this program about almost 2 years, actually. And I started out here in 1988 in the LA Intergroup and Foothill and the Valley, and I had several years of recovery and abstinence here, and I learned so much about service here. I mean, it was my whole life. I was like in my early 20s when I first came to OA, and it really did teach me and train me how to live and how to be and how to be a participant in my own life. And when I came back to OA after moving to Las Vegas, it took me a while to get into OA there, and like 10 years, and 100 pounds. But so since I've been back, I've taken off 90 pounds, and my whole life since being back, the whole program to me is about service. I mean, I don't even understand. There wouldn't be a program without service. It's the only way it works. You get what you need from someone, and you
turn around and give it to someone else. I mean, but that's what it's all about. It's about me turning to the person next to me and saying, hi, how are you? You have a connection, and you now have a new relationship with someone. And your whole life changes as a result of that relationship. Your whole direction, you have like a new fork in the road that goes to, in another direction that you never would have had otherwise. I mean, it's in being in OA, it's taught me everything I know about making relationships, keeping relationships. And every time I do service, I'm putting myself in a position to have another fork in the road. And it's a blessing to know that service is what keeps me going. Service is what keeps me going, and that's what's going to keep me here. So thank you.
Okay, looks like our time's up. I just want to say thank you on behalf of myself and the panel. Thank all of you for being here. We kept saying it's a small group, but actually there's a very dedicated group in a gigantic room here. So thank you for being here to be of service to us. I guess we're just going to do a circle and say the Serenity Prayer if you'd like to join us. Come on up. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so just a quick announcement. I guess this afternoon sessions are switching with the room next to us. So anything that was in B is in here, and anything that was in here is in room B. Does that make sense?